When I was reading this reading a couple of days ago, two stories came to me from my past that I don't think I've thought of since they happened, but they just popped into my mind. It's sort of interesting how that can happen when you read a truth, that it just took me back there. I think it's happening more as I'm getting older to tell the truth, but memories are coming. But I wanted to share them with you because they feel so relevant to this reading. One is that I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and there was an area of Pittsburgh which was called The Hill. And The Hill was an area where people lived who had very little money. It was really an area of poverty, and it looked that way, and it was felt to be very dangerous. You would never go to The Hill alone. But for some reason that I cannot remember, my mother and I was too young to be driving, and she would have to drive me through The Hill to get somewhere that we were going once a week. And I would drive through, and people's laundry would be out, and it was this brightly colored, I can see it in my mind's eye, like it was then. This is, you know, whatever, 55 years ago. And it was so beautiful to me, all of these colors blowing in the wind, and I mean, it's just all I saw. And every time we would drive through there, I would say to my mother, "It's so gorgeous here." And my mother would look at me and say to me, "What can you be seeing that's beautiful?" And we never argued about it because it just felt like there was no argument to be had. But it happened a lot. And I remember that feeling of life and energy and beauty there. And maybe I was even too young to really understand the kind of neighborhood I was in. But several years later, this is what happened yesterday. This came together for me. I was told, somehow I found out, that the area that we drove through, the exact area of The Hill, was inhabited by a whole group of gospel singers that were known in Pittsburgh to be not just magnificent singers, but some of the most deeply spiritual, heart wide open people. And I never put it together until yesterday that that's part of what I was feeling there. It was a super conscious knowing that really, I mean, if I were looking through my mother's eyes without the super conscious quality, it's not even that I was super conscious, but somehow that, of course I wasn't, but that energy was just coming to me, and I knew. And when it came back to me yesterday, I was just filled with that same sense that one would have when one is plugging into something so other than what it looks like is going on. The other story is that when I was in my late 20s, as many of you know, I was sort of guided to go to medical school, but I had never gone to college yet. So I had to take some college courses. And I was down in San Diego, so I went to the University of California at San Diego and just took some classes. And one of them was physics. And I had not been in school for about almost 10 years at that time. And, you know, it was not my nature to be taking these hard classes. I just was not smart in those ways. So I had to take this physics, and the first quiz, I failed. And so I said to my husband, "What am I going to do about this?" He said, "We should get you a tutor." And that was just the perfect idea. So we got this tutor. And all night I was trying to think of his name. This morning it came to me. Todd. I can see him again right there. And he was really pretty strong in himself for, how old could he have been, 22, 23. He was a graduate student. But he sat down and he asked me a lot of questions when I first met him. Just asked me, he was talking to me about life, what I think about life, what's important to me. We just schmoozed, is what we did. And then he said to me, let's go out for a run together. Okay, I was a runner in those days. So we went out for a run, and I came home, and I said to my husband, he's not teaching me physics. So the next time we met, we were going to meet twice a week. I said to him, you need to teach me physics. I don't know any physics. He said, you know everything about physics. I said, I do not. I don't know anything, not one thing. He said to me, you know everything. He said to me, physics is the truth. It's just simply the truth. And as you are open to the truth, he said to me. I didn't know what he was talking about. He was so much smarter than me and wiser. And every day we would get together and we would talk and then we would go for a run. And every day I would come home and say, I'm terrified. I can't take this next quiz. But, you know, I took the next quiz and I got an A. And I wound up getting an A in physics. And I realized that that man was wise enough. He listened to me. He knew things about me and the universe that I didn't know. But he helped me walk over that bridge from this rational mind that was trying to learn physics, which was like never going to happen, not in that way, to that place of intuitive knowing. And he kept saying to me, physics is perfect. When you answer the problems, it's just perfect. It makes perfect sense. You know this. I never knew what he was talking about, but I got an A in physics. Isn't that interesting that this reading brought these two stories out? Just so interesting how the world is so often not what we think it is or how we see it. In this reading today, Jesus is clearly a little irritated with the Pharisees. You know, here he is sitting with these people who are really rabbinical scholars. I mean, they're some of the brightest people of the day. And as Ananta said in one of his talks, as only Ananta can say, he said, there they were, sitting with Jesus Christ himself, sitting with God, and they want to talk about Peter's table manners. And, you know, in a way it's right. They want to say, why didn't you make him wash his hands? How could you do that? And Jesus is, what came to my mind yesterday, maybe because I was just in Israel too, but I had just imagined Jesus going, oi, you know. How could this be? Here I am with these people. And he told them in his own way, you know, here you are trying to pay attention to these laws. And I've mentioned to you before, there are 642 lot of laws that the Jewish people had to pay attention to. But in none of those laws were they going to be able to know about the love of God, to discover intuition, to experience ever new joy. It wasn't going to come that way because they were leaving out the quality that's essential for all of that, which is the superconscious aspect of intelligence. They just simply were not going to find their way there. Because the interesting thing about superconscious intelligence is that if it's not there, you will never find God anywhere. And when it is there, you will see God everywhere. And there's no getting around it. I mean, Swami Kriyananda just says, any intelligence born outside of the self, this is his word, by the way, it's just a sham. It just simply can't be that the truth and true intelligence has to come from within. Here we are, we're living in the very center of intellectualism. There is so much knowledge where we live, not just where we live, but in our country, really, in many areas, but certainly here. And yet there's so much angst. There's so much, as we know and we see, people can't find the truth. There's a restlessness, there's a confusion, because they haven't plugged into that superconscious aspect. There are two mechanisms of intelligence. One is with the mind. It's driven by desires, by the senses, by human intelligence, by knowledge, by building up huge funds of knowledge. But the mind gets very restless, and it gets confused, and it's very vulnerable to what we call Maya. And so, no matter how much we use our minds, we never find that which we're really looking for. And we tend to see a lot about what is wrong. We run the same tapes over and over. But the other way of knowing is through the heart. And that's what Swamiji is talking about in this reading. And in the heart's intelligence is calmness. It lifts us up to a higher level of consciousness and shows us what we're looking for. It puts us in a position, the knowing of the heart, just what our affirmation was about today. Developing the heart's devotion means opening to true divine wisdom and knowing. And from that place, we get extraordinary clarity. We develop perception. We develop insight. We know that which we want to know, that the mind can never know. As again, as Swamiji said, it's just all a sham when it's coming from here. It doesn't lead us anywhere. I want to share another story with you that I've told before many years ago, but it's just so perfect today. The very first patient that I ever went to see when I went to medical school. So this is first year of medical school. Nobody knows anything. To me, it just seems like a setup for them to help us feel terrible, but that's what it is. Except I had been a nurse for many years, and I had been an intensive care and coronary care unit nurse. So I was not afraid of being with people, and I was not afraid of hospitals. But they asked me to see this woman who had some kind of heart disease. And when I went over to the hospital to see her, the nurses, I went to the nursing station. In those days, we actually had physical charts, and I was going to read her chart. And the nurses said to me, she's dying. And they said, and she's very depressed. For days, all she's been saying is she wants to leave. She doesn't want to see anybody. She doesn't want to see her doctors, nobody. And I'm there saying to myself, what? Why did they assign me to this woman? I mean, it really felt so wrong. I was a first-year medical student, and I was going to go in and invade her her privacy, her integrity. I just couldn't fathom that I was being asked to do this. So I made a little detour to the meditation room at Stanford, and I sat there for a little bit. And then I went into her room, and I just sat down with her. This woman looked so sad. She had late-stage congestive heart failure, hard for her to breathe. She was sick. And I just looked at her, and she looked at me. It was such a poignant moment. And then I said to her, "How are you?" And she said, "You know, I'm not doing great." And I said to her, "You want to tell me about it?" And she just started talking. I was being given an hour to see her, then probably going back to the anatomy lab or something. And she told me. She just talked to me for an hour. She told me about her life. She told me about what she had, what she feels she's lost, all of her friends who have died, how hard it is to be sick. And I just listened to her. And I was truly, engrossed with her story. I moved over, I sat on her bed, I put my hand on her, and I left. And I told her I'd be back in 2 days. That was my next clinical day. It was an hour. I walk into her room, and the room's empty, and the bed stripped. And I thought, oh my God, she left. She died, is what I thought. So I went to the nurse's station, and they said to me, "The most amazing thing happened." They said she was so sick, we were just all waiting for her to die. The day after you saw her, she walked out here. She said, "I'm going home." We said, "You can't go home." She said, "Yes, I can." She signed herself out against medical advice. She lived for 6 months. I stayed in touch with her. You know, that woman's energy had been blocked from her heart, even though, interestingly, her illness was all about her heart. She had heart disease, and there was no one else who was coming to see her who knew what it would take to increase her cardiac output. It's really what we're talking about. It's medical jargon, but it really works. Somebody just needed to be witness to her. I didn't know this. Part of me was sitting there saying, "Wow, how am I going to present her?" You know, you have to present these patients. Somebody's going to want to know all the questions you ask with congestive heart failure. When did it start? How many stairs can you climb? Can you lay flat at night? This is what you're supposed to talk about the next day. If any of you ever go to the hospital with shortness of breath, this is what they're going to ask you. I knew all those, but I didn't have, and I just said to myself, I'm going to have to present the truth. And I did. And anyway, that's for another reading, probably. But what's so wonderful about it is that deep understanding right out of this teaching of today, that in order to be well in any way, in order to find truth, purpose, clarity, calmness, we have to find access to the source, the ultimate infinite source of all there is. And the only way to that is through the heart. There is no other path. In that case, it just took listening. For us, it's going to take other things. We are looking to plug into and live through that place of intuitive perception. That's what we want. That's what intuition is. Intuition is the heart's way of knowing the truth. And what is the truth? Divine love prevails. That's the truth. God is love. We say it all the time. And what does that mean? It means that God's love is exactly that from which we have all been made manifest, and that we have to plug back into it to know ourselves, to find the very essence of what we're all looking for. Intuition is beyond logic. Intuition is beyond the logical mind. Intuition is the only truth that there really is. And when we find that truth, we find it because we feel it as joy, as wisdom. We know that. I didn't know it. I couldn't have stood up and given a talk then about why I had to sit on that woman's bed with her. But something in me knew it, because that's what intuition and wisdom is. I had no idea what Todd was doing with me. Not until yesterday. I had no idea. But it doesn't even matter. My mind didn't need to know. Everything I was learning in Stanford Medical School, not that knowledge and thinking isn't important. I love it. But you know, we need to inform it with superconscious intelligence. That was the whole story of Swami Kriyananda. When you think about it, Swami Kriyananda was absolutely one of the best thinkers of our time. He was brilliant, but all of his thinking was informed by superconsciousness, all of it. He used to say, meditate first, then ask your question, then meditate again. Bring in that superconscious aspect of intelligence before you make decisions in your life. Anytime you're feeling out of sorts, what do? You run to your altar. I was telling a friend the other day that I had a troubling experience last week. It just threw me off in a way that I just haven't been thrown off in a long time. When I went back to my house, I was not thinking, but I took ultimately all of the pictures off of my altar, and I just surrounded my couch. So Master was staring at me, Swami was staring at me, all of the masters on our altar, all of my little things that I have on the altar, water from here, rocks from there, everything, like a little girl just sitting there. Help, you know? Really, where else are we going to go? I did not want to think through that with this mind. I wasn't able to not do it yet, but at least with God's grace, I knew enough. No, not the human mind. That's confusion. That's restlessness. That leads you nowhere. You pray for superconscious help. That's what we need to do. We need to meditate. There is no way around it. Everything else is a sham. I will say that I had a lovely conversation with a friend yesterday, and this friend was telling me that they're having a little trouble meditating as deeply or as much as they want. And it came to me, and I think this is true, when you can't meditate, because let's face it, I can stand up here forever and a day and say meditate, meditate, meditate. Of course, that's the right answer. Can I always sit down and empty my mind and meditate? Not quite. But I said to this person, because we can't meditate so well all the time, start serving. Find ways to serve. Because serving, more than anything else I can think of, opens the heart. And we have to remember what the goal is. We meditate, we spend time with other people who are trying to open their hearts, who are looking for superconscious, the superconscious aspect of intelligence, and we serve. And when we serve, we know and we remind ourselves, I'm doing this for you, Divine Mother. I'm doing this for you, God. I'm sitting here with this woman. I'm making this exquisite altar. I'm vacuuming the floor. Whatever it is we're doing. And then, whatever it is we're doing, becomes equal in meaning, in importance, because we're doing it to know God. It doesn't matter what the it is. So let's just all remember the most important thing, I think, that's come through today. Without the super consciousness, you won't find God. With super consciousness, you'll find him and see him everywhere.
Come with me.